North Carolina's Urban Talk Station.
Power 750 WAUG.
Good morning and welcome back to Plain Talk Politics. I'm Jeannie Bonds. We're talking about clean air this morning and some rulemaking that our president has the authority to engage in to ensure that our air is clean. We've got a great panel, Jen Renix with the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy, Luis Martinez with the Natural Resources Defense Council, and Richard Fireman, who's a retired physician and faith leader. We've been talking a little bit about the rule and where it stands politically and what we can do. So I want to turn to Richard now, and let's just talk about this a little bit broader. Why is it so important we get people engaged in this issue? And really, what is the message that we need to send to the White House about moving forward with this very important rule?
Thanks for framing the question in that way, because I think that's the important thing for the public to understand. It is very hard for a president to move against the slow-moving process of government, and sometimes presidents have to be pushed. And we saw in the great social movements over the last century that the presidents had to be pushed. The president had to be pushed to get out of Vietnam. That was a great social movement. Just a decade before, President Johnson asked Martin Luther King in the civil rights movement to push him, to force him to do the right thing, and then we had the Voting Rights Act. President Roosevelt had to orchestrate the public opinion so that he had the authority to move us into war in Europe. The president in the beginning part of the century only allowed women to vote because there was a mass public protest and there was pressure on the president. And the same happened during the abolitionist fight in the 19th century. So we have a public right now that believes that climate change is real, that clean water is vital to human health, that there is a problem with climate change. And just listening to the news this morning about the flooding in Central Europe is devastating, and the heat wave in Pakistan over the last month, where the temperatures are averaging in the 120-degree range, and even in the mountains here in North Carolina. I live on a tributary to the French Broad River, and never in my 14 years here have I seen the river near flood stage in June. It happens in January when there's a lot of rain, but not in June, and the river is almost over my road. So right now, the president has authority to push the EPA to finalize the carbon rule. Right now, the president has the authority to veto the Keystone XL pipeline from crossing into United States territory. He alone has this authority, and we, the public, he used the term in the State of the Union, the State of the Union address, we the people, several times, probably more than several, and we the people need to push the president. So we need to write the president. We need to email the president. We need to come out onto the streets and tell the president no. So the president won't act on the carbon rule until he feels the pressure. The president won't act on Keystone until he feels the pressure. There are going to be dozens of opportunities this summer to influence the president and push the president on Keystone. And so while we're writing and emailing and calling the White House switchboard about the carbon rule, we should also be engaging the president by joining one of these activities against the Keystone Pipeline. And the listeners can go to a website called Summer Heat, which is a combination of actions around the country which they can attend, some in Atlanta, some in D.C., some elsewhere, and I know that your show goes to a lot of places, and people should engage. should engage. They need to get out and be vocal. And only in that way will the president move. If he feels the heat, he will have the support of the public, and he can make the right decision. But if we're quiet and just let this process roll along and let the lobbyists do their work, he will be powerless, or he'll assume that he's powerless to go against their tide.
Yeah, interesting, because you're really calling for, you know, citizen lobbyists to step forward on this issue. Luis, what is the Natural Resources Defense Council doing? What types of actions are you all taking, and how are you engaging in this?
Well, very similar to what Richard just said, I think there's a we've prioritized trying to push the president to take action on the new standards rule to reduce carbon from new power plants. We're also working on the Keystone pipeline to prevent that pipeline from being built. but mostly, I mean, we're working at the state level. Whenever we engage, we're working at the state level to try and make the transition away from fossil fuels towards cleaner sources of energy, towards renewables, towards energy efficiency, which is extremely cost effective, happen. And for example, here in North Carolina, as you mentioned a little while ago, there is a policy in place to promote renewable energy, to require our utilities to purchase a small amount of renewable energy to provide for us. And that's about 3% right now, and it may grow to 12% if the legislature doesn't step in. And those kinds of policies are hugely beneficial. There's been study after study about job creation in all the states that are doing this. In North Carolina, there was a group called Environmental Entrepreneurs, which we collaborate with, which put out a report about the jobs that have been generated in the renewable and energy efficiency fields. And just in 2012, about 10,000 job announcements were reported, and over the last 5 years, we've reported over 20,000 job announcements. So quite interestingly, quite quietly almost, North Carolina has become a leader in renewable energy and energy efficiency. There's tons of small businesses popping up in North Carolina that could do anything from install solar panels in your house to insulate your home to change your windows. All of those jobs are jobs that cannot be exported. You know, you can't have somebody from China come and change your windows, so you're supporting your community. And at the same time, as we transition away from fossil fuels in North Carolina, we're not sending our energy dollars out of state. We're keeping them in our economy. We're not buying fuel, coal from outside the state. We're keeping it right here. So we're helping our economies to prosper economically. And we think it's very important that in North Carolina, people are aware of this fast-growing industry that has become really a national leader. Those 20,000 plus jobs over the last 5 years place North Carolina just behind California in terms of the strength of the clean energy economy. And quite frankly, when the politicians were coming after the renewable energy and energy efficiency standard here in the state, it was those business owners who came out and talked to their politicians and said, "What are you doing? You're crazy. You can't close down this. You can't change this policy. We're investing in our communities. We're creating jobs." And it wasn't a partisan issue. It became all Republican and Democrats were seeing that in their counties, in their cities, in their communities, there were these growing businesses that were employing thousands of people, and that North Carolina, I guess, a little too quietly, had become a leader in this. And ultimately, that's what stopped that push to stop to repeal the renewable energy standard, which again, it just requires our utilities to provide us with a small percentage of energy efficiency here in our state. So it's very important to understand that this transition has huge opportunities to better ourselves economically I used to work in the Northeast states, and in the Northeast states, they already have a program to reduce CO2 emissions, and the kind of one of the very happy outcomes is that they've seen just how powerful it is in the way of generating jobs, generating employment, and creating businesses in their states. So the transition to a clean energy economy is our priority at NRDC, and that's because of the impacts of global warming and even ocean acidification, which is kind of the quiet, unknown, but obviously extremely serious issue about carbon going into our oceans and making our ocean water more acidic, and how that affects the ocean food chain, which is coming from the same issue. It's burning fossil fuels that put CO2 into our atmosphere. It's both causing global warming and causing our oceans to become more acidic. So energy or climate at NRDC are our priorities, and we're encouraging the president to move forward on that national standard. But meanwhile, we've been working in all states to push state standards that'll help those states transition away. And we're happy to report that it hasn't been the usual suspect. This is happening in every state. For example, Texas is a worldwide leader in wind power. And they're doing it their own way, and they're it's a huge economic boon for them. So there's opportunities to be had if this is done smartly, but we need to get going immediately.
I'm glad, Luis, that you made that connection with the renewable energy piece here in North Carolina, because North Carolina was the first southeastern state to put those standards in for renewable energy. I think something so many people are proud of. And, you know, for individuals who are interested in state rights, instead of always having, you know, a collective national standard, that renewable energy standard is interesting because each state gets to look at their renewable resources they have and set their standards. And, you know, if they have more biomass or solar or wind, they're able to apply that as it fits for their state instead of it being a national standard. So that's one that we've talked a little bit about on Plain Talk, and we'll keep following along with that renewable energy piece, so I'm glad you brought that up. Jen, the Southern Alliance, what all are you doing to help move the president on this issue with clean air?
Well, thank you for that lead-in. And Jeannie, I did want to point out, you are correct, North Carolina is the first southeastern state to have passed a renewable energy and efficiency standard. Unfortunately, it's still the only southeastern state all these years later. So we should certainly be proud of that here in North Carolina, that we have joined ranks with approximately 30 other states and territories to really promote renewable energy for its and efficiency, of course, as well, for its multitude of benefits. Here at the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy, we have multiple campaigns going on at all time. We do believe it is very important to push the president. As we've stated numerous times, he has both the moral and the regulatory authority, so we continue to encourage our members and supporters to do that. We continue reaching out to the White House as well. We also encourage those who we work with to speak to the Senate, if you will. The Senate, as a legislative body in Washington, certainly has the authority for everything from confirmations of the president's cabinet members to passing and ratifying certain laws, and so we believe it is important to continue to speak to Congress, even though Congress has sometimes gotten into a deadlock state, but that is no reason to not continue at least attempting dialogue and to communicate from the home states and we are doing the work. But then probably our biggest work and our most important work here in North Carolina and throughout the southeastern region where we work is really seeking to build capacity at both a state and a regional level around, I guess you'd maybe think of it in three ways. We we want to show the cost savings to consumers, to energy consumers, which basically is all of us. I mean, every one of us consumes energy every day without fail. There's the job creation benefits that come, and then the health benefits. And all of those can come from a transition to both increased renewable energy, but also energy efficiency. That is the quiet, slow workhorse that isn't maybe as exciting as a solar panel or as dramatic as a wind turbine. It's harder to convey it. It's harder to show it. And yet the benefits that can come from doing more with the same number of electrons are remarkable, and particularly for the Southeast. We have very low electricity rates, which doesn't really encourage people to conserve. In other parts of the country, rates are significantly higher, and there has been, in some states, almost a flat rate of growth for decades, and that even includes the addition of a growing population. So those are the different areas that we work here in North Carolina and around the Southeast. And I did want to pick up on something. I believe it was Louise who said, when we are investing in renewable energy and energy efficiency here in our state, we're not sending money out to purchase fossil fuels. And that is a really important point for your listeners to understand. North Carolina has the dubious distinction of, at least this was a few years ago with the data, as a state, we spent the second most in the entire country to purchase and import coal. The data said in 2008 we spent over $2.3 billion to bring coal into North Carolina. That's money bleeding out of our state, going to other states and, in fact, other foreign countries to bring in a fuel source. And that is not good for our economy, certainly not good for our health. We have discussed that already in the program, but it is no accident that North Carolina was fifth in the nation in 2012 for installed solar, and projections are that North Carolina may even be fourth in the nation for installed solar next year.
Yeah, that's a very interesting point, because our base, energy here is nuclear and coal, and as we transition with new technologies and renewable, I think it's really important to keep that cost factor in play. So that's a great point to bring out for our listeners. I wanted you all to have a chance to sort of weigh in on the health side as well, because we've talked about this as a social movement. We all know clean air is so important. I mean, any thoughts that you each want to weigh in on just, the health perspectives? Because we spend, certainly a lot of money on, issues related to our health. And so our air certainly is important to that. Richard, did you want to kick that off for a few minutes?
Yeah, the health benefits are obvious to, I'm sure, most readers. We have epidemics in childhood asthma, not only in North Carolina, but across the country. We have epidemics of cardiovascular disease, sudden cardiac deaths, cancer clusters related to coal mining communities and areas around coal-fired power plants. That data is old, and it's still really, really relevant. I just wanted to say one more thing about how North Carolina citizens can engage. Almost, I think, well over 40% of North Carolinians get their power either through co-ops or electric cities. The power is generated by Duke Energy, but it's distributed by their co-ops. Mm-hmm. And a co-op is a member organization. And in Western North Carolina, the French Broad Electric Membership Co-op limits the number of solar projects that can be net metered, that is, make it possible for people to afford these systems by balancing out how much they use and how much they generate so that they can actually afford to get the system on board. French Broad limits that to 50 customers out of about 37,000. So, and it's the same across the other co-ops. They may not have that limit, but it's probably just as bad. So this is a place where people can engage. None of the co-ops have real strong energy efficiency programs. This is another place where the people can engage. And so renewable energy industries and energy efficiency industries are homegrown economies. They provide people with meaningful work. They provide the health benefits because their homes are more comfortable, they're sealed, and they're using less energy, and they can afford to spend more of their precious dollars on other things like healthy food and other necessities. But it helps build community. And what we're needing is people to engage in community building and making their energy sources more local, creating meaningful work for them. So I encourage your listeners to, if they belong to a co-op, to engage in their co-op membership, to make sure that their co-op begins to promote energy efficiency programs and begins to allow net metering of renewable energy projects. In this way, we can grow North Carolina's economy while transitioning to a 21st century energy system.
Very, very good point. We could probably do a whole show on the economics of electric cities and rural co-ops and some of those issues, but that's a great point because they can go to their co-op, they can be an active member, and they can actually influence the policies of their local co-op. And the same with an electric city. They can go to their city council and weigh in on that public utility as well. I want to, Luis and Jen, did you all want to weigh in on health issues or any more about how people could get involved? Kind of give us some closing thoughts from your organizations.
This is Jen, and I'm really glad you brought this up because one of the initiatives that SACE has been working on for several years and is continuing to go more and more public with is there are some really largely unspoken about but increasingly well-known impacts from dirty energy and climate change that are disproportionately impacting huge percentages of our population, and studies and statistics have shown that African Americans and other persons of color, as well as low income across racial communities, they really struggle with disproportionate impacts, that is health, economic, as well as climate vulnerability, directly associated with dirty energy. And one of those, just for example, African Americans and other people of color show a higher rate of respiratory impacts than the general population as a rule. And then perhaps not coincidentally here, a couple of years ago, a report from the Clean Air Task Force showed that almost 70% of African Americans in the United States live within 30 miles of a coal plant. So you have a lot of different factors happening here. We are all impacted by dirty air. We are all impacted by carbon and other forms of pollution that come from burning coal. But there are some among us who are more impacted, who are disproportionately impacted. And then you've got problems with mercury exposure, which is impacting health across the board. You've got people who are at risk from literally from having their IQ suffer as opposed to mercury exposure and other toxins. And one of the most costly impacts to communities, Richard mentioned, that we have asthma epidemics. I am the mother of an asthmatic. I am acutely aware of what this means when an asthmatic child cannot go to school, and African Americans, particularly here in the Southeast, are more prone to incidents of asthma and asthma attacks. Not only does that child miss a day of school, oftentimes a parent must miss a day of work to stay home. That is not an option for some people. You may lose your job. You may incur an emergency room visit, the fees that go with that. The medication that our children learn to take from early on, their puffers, their spacers, things like that. So that's a real and true impact that comes from largely, not exclusively, but largely our reliance on dirty energy sources. And disproportionately, some of these impacts are falling on some communities, and that's not fair. And that a reason enough to really push our president and urge other elected leaders to do something about this issue.
So really, our listeners, they need to contact Senator Burr, Richard Burr, Senator Kay Hagan, certainly their individual congressman from their district, and then go to whitehouse.gov and press that contact button and get in touch with them there as well.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you.
Luis, some final thoughts from the Natural Resources Defense Council?
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. I would just like to echo the fact that this is an issue, climate change, that it impacts all of us wherever we are. I mean, from the flooding that Richard mentioned to the extremely powerful storms that we've seen over the last few years, to heat waves, to drought, to uncontrollable fires, and then just burning fossil fuels and all the complications, the health impacts of things like mercury, which end up in our fish right here in the Great Smoky Mountains, which we think we might be a little more isolated from things like hurricanes from the coast. We'll see advisories about how much fish you can consume because of the mercury that comes from burning coal that is deposited in our mountains and in our streams. So this does impact all of us, and I would urge your listeners to contact their representative, both the president and their senators here, to just move forward now.
They can't actually, I guess, comment on the rulemaking because that part of the process is closed, but they can just, you know, go to that whitehouse.gov or call the switchboard. Jen, could you give that number again for our listeners?
Sure. That number for the White House switchboard is 202-456-1111, and I would concur strongly with what Richard said earlier. Yes, we definitely want people to speak in support of the carbon rule. It is overdue. It is overdue according to their legal timeline. It should have come out in April of this year, but we would love people to reach out to the president and their elected officials about taking action on climate and moving off of dirty energy altogether. It comes down to a lot of different steps. The carbon rule is one very important piece of it, but it is not the silver bullet. We will not see a magical new world the day that one is put into place. There are a lot of other steps, but it's a really important one.
And should they refer to that as the carbon rule of the Clean Air Act? How should they phrase that just to make sure that their email comments or their phone call is heard on the correct issue?
Yeah, that would be a good way to say, I strongly support the proposed carbon rule and encourage the EPA to finalize this rule and to begin implementing it. I think that's sort of the most succinct way. And then, of course, there are lots of other ways that people in their individual lives and, of course, our administration and elected officials can also begin to make an impact at reducing climate pollution, and people are free to speak about those as well.
And I want to go around to our panel. If folks want to get in touch with your organization or you to talk more about some of the things you mentioned about communities or learn more or get involved, how do they contact each of you?
Since I'm an outlier with organizations, I'll go first.
Okay.
My email address is firepeople, just like it sounds, FIREPEOPLE. At Maine, MAIN.NC.US. And I am a volunteer with the Western North Carolina Alliance, which is based here in Asheville, and the Sierra Club, as Sierra Club's Asheville Beyond Coal campaign, which is trying to get a date certain for closing the Asheville coal plant. You can just go on the website to find the Asheville Beyond Coal campaign and the work, comprehensive work in Western North Carolina that the Western North Carolina Alliance is doing, both on energy and on water and air and forestry.
What's the website for organization?
Our name says it all. We are cleanenergy.org, and we welcome people to look us up, learn more, and feel free to get in touch with me. I can be reached at jennifer@cleanenergy.org.
Okay, and Luis?
And you can find our website at www.nrdc.org, and there it's a great resource for information, and you can contact me at lmartinez@nrdc.org.
Okay, great panel, great discussion. Thank you all. This has been Plain Talk Politics. I'm Jeannie Bonds. You can find us at plaintalkpolitics.com.